This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Cincinnati City Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld released a video statement this morning proclaiming again his innocence after his arrest last week on federal corruption charges. Sittenfeld is the third member of City Council arrested this year and the second in just the past several weeks. Here's what Sittenfeld said today.
Hi, everyone. I want to first say thank you to the people of Cincinnati, to my family, to friends, to folks I've heard from all across the city, our state, the country, for your incredible outpouring of love and support. It has comforted me and our family enormously. The allegations against me are simply not true. I am innocent, and it's meant the world to me to have people reaching out saying, PG, we know you, we know your character, and we believe in you. I stand strongly on my record of public service, including providing help that's in the public interest to anyone, whether they've ever made a political contribution to me or not. I've done things like step in to save a senior center that was facing closure, pass legislation to bring a new grocery store to a neighborhood food desert, champion more affordable housing, and a whole lot more. And in every case, I did it for the simple reason that it was the right thing to do for our city. And I've consistently fought for investment into our city for the exact same reason, to bring jobs and growth to our community. My public service has always, always been guided by doing what's best for Cincinnati. So many of you have asked about how you can help so that we can achieve justice, and I'm incredibly grateful for that, and we'll get back to you soon. I do not give up, and I will not give up. I intend to keep fighting these false allegations, fighting for you, and fighting for the future of our city. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was Cincinnati City Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld in a video posted to social media just this morning. Sittenfeld pleaded not guilty and took to social media to argue his innocence last week and today in a case in which he's accused of accepting $40,000 in contributions to his political action committee in exchange for favorable votes related to development. Sittenfeld had a campaign war chest of more than $700,000 as he set his sights on a mayoral campaign next year. Now he's the third member of City Council arrested this year on federal bribery charges and the second in just the past several weeks. Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost issued a statement on Monday morning. He said, quote, "We will go to the Supreme Court today to seek suspension of Cincinnati City Councilman P.G. Sittenfeld during his federal corruption case. Every defendant is presumed innocent in court, but it'd be foolish to ignore the risk of allowing him to wield public power under indictment." So with all this going on at City Hall, how can the local government rebuild its trust? We're joined now on Cincinnati Edition by former Cincinnati City Manager Jerry Newfarmer. He's the president and CEO of Management Partners. Jerry, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be with you.
And former Cincinnati City Council member and attorney Kevin Flynn. Kevin, welcome back.
Thank you, Michael.
And we want to hear from you as well, your thoughts about all this going on at City Hall and your feelings about what Councilman Sittenfeld had to say today about the charges facing him. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Jerry, I do want to start with you because Cincinnati City Hall, as expressed by the mayor and other members of council and City Hall observers, is facing a bit of a crisis now with three elected officials arrested in just this calendar year. What would be your recommendation for a municipal government hoping to rebuild any lost public trust?
Well, I think rebuilding public trust is a function of leadership, Michael, and that will come over time. You know, the city has transparent, well-defined procedures and policies for doing development. This whole sense of corruption issue has revolved around development in the city. And the city does have well-established procedures and policies. Elected officials should not be involved, pure and simple, in negotiating development deals. There are processes to do that. The professional staff is who should be doing that negotiating, following the city's adopted policies. And there are procedures for doing that. What's happened, apparently, in recent years is that elected officials have been involved in development deals and dealing with developers. I've heard now, since this whole thing is broken, I've heard stories about lobbyists, being all over City Hall and so forth. That ought not to be needed or happen.
That's Jerry Neufarmer. He's president and CEO of Management Partners and a former city manager in Cincinnati. We're also joined by former Cincinnati City Councilman and local attorney Kevin Flynn. Kevin, when you served on council, can you describe what the relationship was like between elected officials like you and your fellow members of council and those pushing to have developments done here in the city?
Well, I can tell you from my perspective, and my practice in the law was in real estate. Much of it was related to development. But even then, I did not try to get involved in negotiating the deal. People on a regular basis would come and explain their proposed development. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You have to know what it is you're voting on when the project is ready to come to you. And I will say that other than to perhaps provide an introduction to the folks in the Economic Development Department to say, hey, here's someone that wants to invest in my neighborhood of Mount Airy. Here they are, let them present their idea to you. I don't think I ever intervened in any way during my 4 years on council. Anytime that anyone is speaking really to professional staff, whether it's in economic development, the fire department, the police department, whatever it might be, they should be going through the city manager. The city manager should be the liaison between the professional staff and the policy setters on council. It should not be going around the city manager to directly attempt to influence decision-making.
We'll note that Councilman Jeff Pastor also faces similar charges, though the investigators have made it clear that Pastor and Sittenfeld were not working together in creating the situation in which they now each face separate charges, but they were dealing with apparently the same investigators related to the same development. And Kevin, to that end, you've been in city government. You know these folks, you know these players and these stories, whether it be Tamiya Denard, Jeff Pastor, and P.G. Sittenfeld, all arrested this year as members of Cincinnati City Council. In general, what were your thoughts as you've learned about these cases?
I was quite frankly shocked to hear this. I know all three of those folks, and I like all three of those folks, and so I don't want to prejudge anything. I will say, though, that it has the appearance of impropriety, even if nothing technically was wrong. Maybe I'm the oddball, but I never solicited or took any donations during my 4 years on council. I solicited contributions when I was running. And then after I got off council, I solicited to, because I had put my own money and my wife's money into the campaign, I solicited to reduce that debt after I was off council. I just didn't think it was appropriate from my own personal ethos to be asking people for money that were going to be doing business or were doing business at City Hall.
You know, without getting into the details of fundraising and how all that works, I, as a citizen of Cincinnati, I was disappointed in these developments. I think it's unfortunate. I made a general comment about the established processes and so on. And Kevin talked about not going around the city manager and that kind of thing. That's what I meant by the process. What's happened, though, is that for some long period of time, the city council itself has not been actually directly involved in any negotiations. It's been mostly the mayor. And the council has not taken advantage of what is now newly re-permitted under the city charter to have executive sessions. That's the forum the council and the mayor should use to give guidance to their professional staff if there are unusual negotiations that are in process. The routine stuff, the staff has all the policies and can just do it. It's the unusual projects, apparently like the one that was at issue in the latest round of charges, but there have been others where the council and the elected officials would have been benefited by using the executive session forum for having candid conversations about what the city's negotiating position should be, and then send their negotiator out to do it, just like Hamilton County has done for years. You know, Cincinnati used to do that many years ago and then lost a court case, and it took, you know, some long period of time to get the charter amended so the council can do it again. They haven't been doing it since the charter's been reamended, and that's just a practice that needs to be reestablished to give elected officials a proper role in the process.
Jerry, executive session is one of those situations in which government bodies can meet without members of the public present, but it's only under certain circumstances. Could you help our listeners understand how executive session works?
Yes. In executive session, there's a very specific state law that applies about what the rules of the game are. The subject has to be announced in advance. There are generally four topics that are permissible for executive session, and that's it. Those topics are things like evaluating the performance of your employee, establishing a negotiating position for labor agreements, working on real estate development deals, that sort of thing.
And lawsuits.
It has to be announced in advance what it is. Only council members and their assigned staff are permitted to be there. And if there are actions to be taken, those actions have to be taken in public subsequently. So the whole thing at the end of the process is transparent.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We're joined by Jerry Neufarmer, the former city manager of Cincinnati and the president and CEO of Management Partners. Also with us today via Zoom is Kevin Flynn, the former Cincinnati City Council member and local attorney. We should note that both P.G. Sittenfeld and Jeff Pastor are pleading not guilty currently to the federal charge that they face, though former Councilwoman Tamaya Denard has pleaded guilty and is expected to be sentenced very soon. Join us, 513-419-7100. We will continue this conversation just ahead. And later, we want to hear from you also about your Thanksgiving plans, your thoughts on the pandemic's impact on the holiday, and how you and your family are responding to the recommended guidelines. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our look at the federal corruption charges involving multiple members of the elected city government in Cincinnati. We're joined now via Zoom by former Cincinnati City Manager Jerry Neufarmer. He's the president and CEO now of Management Partners. And we also have with us former Cincinnati City Councilman and attorney Kevin Flynn. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email your thoughts to talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'll read some tweets that we've received about this situation. At MDirty wrote to us, "City Council is the main reason, after living in Clifton for 20-plus years, that I moved outside the city limits in 2005. Andrew Flick tweets at us, quote, "Who's next?" Craig writes to us, "Every corrupt politician should be removed from office at a minimum. We, the people, demand our leaders be accountable, honest, and competent. If they're also wise and compassionate, those are bonuses. But the first three are hard requirements." 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join us. And Kevin, I want to come back to you, and I don't expect you to name names or anything here, but I'm curious about if there were ever a situation while you were an elected official here in the city of Cincinnati where you felt uncomfortable by a request that may have been coming from someone outside the government who had, say, a potential development coming online or some other similar opportunity.
Off the top of my head, I cannot think, you know, no one solicited me.
So I guess I'm asking about the prevalence, you know, I mean, how often, and sometimes it may not even be motivated by wrongdoing, right? Some people may be ignorant of the process that Jerry so eloquently laid out for us about the way the infrastructure at a municipal government is designed to operate. But I guess I would be curious about how frequently people are coming to the elected officials out of order of that process.
Well, people come to the city council members all the time. And, you know, some of the advice that I got from former council members was, don't live your life on the third floor. It will consume you, because as many meetings as you take, there will be that many more meetings that people want you to take. So I would say that it was not uncommon at all for people to, you know, first of all, and it boggles my mind that to do a real estate transaction in the city of Cincinnati, people were hiring lobbyists. They're paying people to influence the decision making. As Jerry said, there are guidelines that are set forth that our professionals in the economic development department, community and economic development department, are very competent at scoring. And you go down the list and you get so many points for each item, and then they will make their recommendation on whether there should be a zoning change, whether this should be given an extraordinary TIF or a tax abatement or whatever is needed to influence so that the economic development comes into the city, that we get more people working in the city, driving tax revenue up so that we can do the things in the city that we need to do, pay our firefighters, pay our police officers, patch the potholes in the street, and move our city forward.
And that recommendation, Michael, as Kevin said, at the end of the process, if it's done properly, should be from the staff to the council in writing and should be public for a couple of weeks before the council has to vote on it, so that the public, everybody, can see what's happening and why. Because the staff report will give the analysis about the what's being recommended and why. And that should be transparent.
And one of the things that I railed against when I was on council was these large, you know, tens of millions of dollars economic deals were coming to us on a Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock to be voted on the following afternoon or the following Monday afternoon in budget and finance at 1 p.m. And that also happened to be a day that I had two other committee meetings in the morning. So literally the work had to get done over the weekend to read these economic development proposals that could be 70, 80, 90 pages long.
And Jerry, let me
ask. That's the way it's supposed to be done, Kevin.
Jerry, let me ask you, as a former city manager, what do you think is going on with city staff right now? How would someone in your position, the position you used to have, be working under this cloud? These are folks who aren't elected. They're there every day to do the work of the people as well. But with this type of stuff going on involving the electeds, what should the task be for the administration?
Well, Michael, I appreciate your question. I'm not in touch with city staff members, so I have no idea what's going on with them, but I can speculate. You know, a professional city manager ascribes to a code of ethics. And it's the code of ethics that defines the professionalism of city management. And the manager should set the tone for the staff that is not politicized. It's out of politics. You know, I arranged it, curiously enough, for the FBI's public integrity section to make a presentation to the annual conference of the Ohio City Management Association because of their role in not letting graft and corruption happen. Now, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, a long time. They've always had that role. But professional managers, you know, the ethics of our profession really are important to preserve the integrity of the staff and public agency processes.
And Jerry is too modest to mention this, but you know, Jerry was one of our best city managers and was forced sometimes in and in fact forced out because of politics, in my estimation. And it's that going away from the concept of the elected officials setting the policy by which we want to move our city forward and the implementation of that by professional staff that are walled off from the politics. It's why if you go into the mayor's office, mayor, city manager's ante room, there are very few pictures of city managers, even though it goes back to 1925, but there are two walls filled with mayors. The mayors are supposed to change. They're the elected officials. They're supposed to cycle through. The city management staff is supposed to stay. The city manager should be there, and it shouldn't depend on who is elected mayor, who is elected council, as to whether they get to continue in their job if they're doing a good professional job.
Let's get a quick call in. We'll go to the phone lines with Greg. Hi, Greg. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Sure.
So I had read something about this where Sittenfeld had like a secret pack. I wasn't sure of the bias of what I was reading. But from what I read from the FBI agents who kind of got him to kind of talk about it, he had mentioned a few things about how people really aren't going to be snooping around this. This is something that, you know, we can rely on as being, you know, relatively hush-hush. I just wanted to know if maybe somebody could shed some light on that. Is that a very common thing for people who currently hold office to kind of put money aside,
Greg,
for their future?
We appreciate the call. We'll hang up, and I'll let the panel discuss this. And I'll just note just some facts of the case. The indictment does lay out some conversations that were alleged to have taken place involving Councilman Sittenfeld and the undercover FBI agents who were investigating this. I'll note some reporting from Sherry Coolidge and Dan Horn at the Cincinnati Inquirer that explained that Sittenfeld allegedly had a scheme to funnel money from developers into a political action committee, a PAC that he secretly controlled. That's the characterization by the Inquirer's reporting. Quote, according to the indictment, the developers were actually undercover FBI agents who handed Sittenfeld checks totaling $40,000 on three different occasions in 2018 and 19. The indictment states that Sittenfeld solicited the money in exchange for his support of a plan to develop the former Convention Place Mall at 435 Elm Street. Kevin, political action committees aren't anything new, but this timing of the allegations from 2018, it coincides with a ballot initiative here in the city that would change the way people could contribute to candidates. I believe it was something along the lines of you could make either an individual contribution or a contribution through an LLC, but not both and not through two separate LLCs. And it looks like, according to the indictment, that Sittenfeld was trying to get some money from potential donors before voters approved that measure. Is that correct?
That's what it looks like, you know, from reading the indictment. The idea being that in our election system, we have a limit of $1,100 that you can give to a candidate. And people were getting around that limit because the campaign finance folks were saying that an LLC is a separate person, so therefore you can take $1,100 from an LLC, even if it's owned 100% by an individual who's already given you $1,100. So that's what the charter amendment did, was attempted to get around that. Now, you didn't need to do that with a separate PAC because all you had to do was have a separate LLC. So this concept of, and I'm not sure what this PAC purports to be, whether it's a leadership PAC or an independent third party PAC under the Citizens United case, where it's not supposed to be controlled or have any coordination with the candidate. If it's a leadership pack, it almost doesn't make sense for it to be a quote secret pack, because the idea is that the leader is going to be wanting to spread that money to other like-minded people. So Nancy Pelosi has a leadership pack. She's going to spread that around to Democratic candidates around the country. It doesn't make sense for Nancy Pelosi to have a secret leadership pack. If an independent political action committee, it should not be controlled by the candidates. It should have nothing to do with the candidate.
We'll continue to follow this case. I'm grateful for the time that was given to us today by Jerry Neufarmer and Kevin Flynn. Very informative conversation. I hope we can have you both back on as this continues to make its way through the legal and political process. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Michael.
A little bit later on this afternoon at 2 o'clock, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine and leaders of the Ohio Hospital Association will hold a special press conference. It's 2 o'clock. We're going to have that live here on 91.7 FM and at WVXU.org. It's being described by the governor's office as a press conference on COVID-19 and Ohio hospitals. That's at 2 o'clock here on 91.7. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.